Welcome to Political Coffee, your one-hour thought-provoking news and commentary as you begin your day. And now, here's your host, Jeff Krops.
So let me ask you this question, friends, as we begin a Thursday of Political Coffee, talking about the political issues of the day that really do impact your life and how you can use them to change your world by having meaningful conversations with a persuadable person in your world. Let me ask you this question. Who should get vaccinated for COVID first? Senior citizens or teachers? I'm going to talk a little bit about that today because there's an interesting piece in the Seattle Times by a leftist, of course, as you would call him this, asking who's doing it right, Washington State or Oregon? The columnist, of course, is wrong, but it brings up some interesting points. We're going to talk about that today because it's a companion piece in The Federalist by Christopher Bedford. He writes this: COVID isn't a threat to American kids, selfish teachers, their unions, and the Democrat allies are. And there are some stunning examples of unbelievable things that teachers are saying in not wanting to come back to class. And to top that all off, folks, you're not going to believe. Well, you know the old saying is California goes, so goes Oregon. Yeah, this is coming here. You know what's going on in public schools in California? This is a Gateway Pundit story. California's proposed ethnic studies curriculum urges students to chant to an Aztec deity of human sacrifice and cannibalism. And it calls for a counter-genocide against white Christians. Yeah, I guess they're going to teach this down in California. And how long until it's taught here in Oregon? How interesting. We're going to talk about all of that today, plus your phone calls, as you know. 2 hours today. Quick programming note, as you know. Next Monday, Political Coffee goes to just 1 hour. And we go to just 1 hour because we have this new great lineup for you folks. 12 hours of political, live, political call-in talk radio. And I think the only place in Oregon you're going to find it is KSLM. So we go to 1 hour at the 7 o'clock hour next Monday. Brian Kilmeade will be on for 2 hours live. And then Stacey Ann live for Good Morning Salem. And then 2 hours live of Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA. You see him on Fox and other places live. And then Sean Hannity live, as always, and Mark Levin live. And it's 12 hours starting next Monday. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. Emails to jeff at 1220.am or jeff at KSLM. Dot news. Now, I also want to thank Dwight for sending me a couple of these really interesting emails, especially the one about Seattle Times and about COVID vaccinations and kids getting back into schools. Because a lot of people are upset that Kate Brown has made it mandatory now. We'll get into that because that's part of this equation. Mandatory that schools open. But to do that, she had to let teachers jump in line ahead of the line of the most vulnerable, the people who are the ones who are dying, the senior citizens. We'll talk about that today. Plus, I got another, well, apparently the governor sent out this climate action email. So and another unnamed state employee. And by the way, thank you to all of you state employees who suffer, as we call it, suffering for the Lord. By being in state government as a dutiful state employee and having to put up with all of the politically correct garbage that gets rammed down your throats, I just don't know how you do it. And I am, and I mean this, grateful to you all for doing it. And thank you for listening, and thank you for sending me stuff like this. From the governor to all state employees, 1 year of climate action. It's hard to believe, she writes, that a year has passed since I signed Executive Order 20-04, which directed state agencies to take action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions while protecting Oregon's most vulnerable communities from the impacts of climate change. Standing shoulder to shoulder with young Oregonians from across the state to celebrate that occasion. In other words, standing with the young students that we have brainwashed in public education. And she goes on to talk about bittersweet that the next generation, climate change, that the legislation, the second legislative session, was cut short by walkouts in a partisan bid to stop statewide climate policy overwhelmingly supported by Oregonians. And though we didn't realize it at the time, it would be one of the last events celebrated in person at the Capitol. As only a few short days later, our lives and our worst places changed dramatically due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Hey, Kate. Did you know, Kate, that the Marion County Courthouse is open? Do you know that, Kate, the Marion County Courthouse has been open except for 2 weeks after you shut down the state? So if the Marion County Courthouse can be open and you can conduct normal business there, Kate, including trials and people showing up at trials, because I know I was there for a hearing, sitting in the back. Did you know, Kate, that since they've been able to do that successfully and nobody's apparently getting sick with COVID because they're doing it successfully, why can't you do that, Kate? And if any reporter had any guts or courage in this state, they would ask you that question. But they don't. Oh, and by the way, statewide climate policy that's overwhelmingly supported by Oregonians? Really, Kate? Is it overwhelmingly supported by Oregonians? Once you ask the question, do you support this policy of cap and trade if it would cost you your job? Have you seen those numbers, Kate? It ain't overwhelmingly supported by Oregonians. Once they figure out what it means to them, or if you ask the question, do you support the governor's statewide climate policy if it increases your cost of living far beyond your ability to keep up, you would see a very different number. Anyway, she goes on to talk about, again, climate change now is racist. If you oppose climate change policy, you are now a racist, because the impacts, she claims, of climate change disproportionately fall on historically disadvantaged and vulnerable communities, Black, Indigenous, Tribal, Latino, Latina, Latinx, you know, for those transgenders, Pacific Islanders, and communities of color, as well as low-income and rural Oregonians. Our work on climate is inextricably connected to our work to advance equity and racial justice. Hey, Kate, did you know that all of your massive tax, new taxes, higher taxes like 3,000% taxes on alcohol, and cigarette taxes like at, what, $2 a pack? Did you know, Kate, that that also really, really damages disadvantaged and vulnerable communities? And how does that advance equity and racial justice? You know, it would be nice if a enterprising reporter would also ask that question, but Don't expect that. Anyway, she goes on to talk about all the wonderful things she's doing for you, especially this new Office of Climate Policy at ODOT. To manage to provide data on the climate impacts of ODOT's major investment decisions, resulting in a historic 60% increase in allocation of federal funding for biking, walking, and public transportation. Yes, we wouldn't dare put money back into the roads because people driving those, you know, carbon emission producing cars is evil. We want to make the roads so bad that nobody wants to drive on them anymore. That's the message. Yeah, there's that little thing, Kate, about Oregon's Constitution, saying it has to go for roads. Yeah, that little thing, our gas taxes. Anyway, statewide public electric charging plans. Implementing every mile counts state transportation plan. And all of it is meant to make it harder for you to drive your gas guzzling or diesel. Oh, by the way, did you see that they are reviving this crazy idea of banning diesel now? Hey, where's Timber Unity when you need them? Hey, Timber Unity guys, you don't want to show up for Senate Bill 554, the gun bill, even though most of you carry guns and protect your families with them. You don't want to show up for that. Are you going to show up for this one now? Don't you guys wake up? Wildfire prevention and mitigation work planning at the Public Utility Commission. She goes on to talk about a whole bunch of other things. And she says the list goes on and on and on. Of course it does. We're working to implement a 30-year vision for climate action. Now, wait a second. Why is it a 30-year vision? I thought we only had 9 years left now, Kate, according to AOC and Bernie Sanders. You know, your political soulmates. I thought we only had 9 years left, Kate, to save the planet. And it's a 30-year program? Really? And then, of course, she thanks you, the state employees, for your hard work and dedication, because none of this would have been possible. You know what she really means by that. Thank you to all you dues-paying state workers who are unionized, because your money, the taxpayer money given in union dues, is given to make sure that Democrats get elected, and Kate Brown got elected so that she could implement this policy, which is going to raise your cost of living dramatically. Have you seen what they're doing in California? Have you seen the numbers of people leaving California, coming to Oregon, going to Idaho, going to Arizona, going to Nevada, going to Texas, going anywhere but California? Why? Because they can't afford to live there anymore. This is Kate Brown's Oregon. Thank you, Kate, for your wonderful climate action email. I'm sorry, folks. I just had to get that off of my chest. I promise when we come back, I'll get into the verdict is in. Who did the vaccines right, Washington or Oregon? Do you take care of vulnerable seniors, or do you vaccinate those 25-year-old or 30-year-old teachers first? What do you think? 503-589-1220 is the power of your team. We'll talk about it back in a moment. It's 620.
Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
Stop the car. 22 minutes past 6 o'clock. We are back. Great to have you with us. 503-589-1220 is that Power Buick GMC talk line. Emails to Jeff at 1220.am or Jeff at KSLM.news. Hey, by the way, just quickly before I get into this piece out of the Seattle Times that Should have been written in Oregon, but oh well. You know, Senate Bill 296 is going to come out of committee today, apparently. Brian Boquist, Senator Brian Boquist, warned us that this allows Guantanamo Bay style indefinite incarceration, suspends habeas corpus and the rule of law, and basically the Oregon Constitution, rather. I'm going to get into that a little bit. This is a bad bill, and I see exactly what Brian is saying, line by line, and I will give them to you. I will also talk about, you know, yesterday Lars was talking about the reparations bill. Well, Brian has asked some interesting questions. He sent me those questions. He's asked those questions of the lawyers who write this stuff, shall we call it, down in the basement of the Capitol building. Now, ostensibly, it's all supposed to be constitutional, right? If you're a lawyer working for the legislature downstairs, why would you write any bill that is unconstitutional? Seems pretty elemental, right? Well, they're lawyers. I mean, remember Bill Clinton, a lawyer arguing about the meaning of the word is? They're lawyers, folks. My apologies to any of you lawyers listening to me out there, but you know precisely what I'm talking about. You can twist anything. It is human nature. Look at how you can twist scripture to justify some of the sick things that happen inside the quote-unquote Christian church. Anyway, so he's asked legislative counsel for an opinion. Now, opinions by the legislative counsel carry a lot more weight than just the ideology of a lawyer who's drafting, say, the reparations bill. The opinion is different. This now gets used in court cases. So it's typically done by the chief legal counsel. The head, who works, of course, and can be fired by either the speaker or the president of the Senate. So it's not like that they would ever write an opinion that would be, you know, politically correct or anything, right? No, if you notice a little sarcasm in my voice. Anyway, he asked some interesting questions about it, and I will get to Senate Bill 296, which takes away a lot of your constitutional rights, and the reparations bill in the next hour. You don't want to miss it. I want to thank Freedom Heating and Air for, again, being a great sponsor of this radio show and this radio station. They make your life better, and that's really the reality, especially with those great air filtration systems that they can put in your home that will literally take the virus out of the air. Any viruses, kill it. Bacteria, other stuff floating around, just and keep the house cleaner with dust. It's one of the many things they can do for you. So why don't you check them out, freedomheatingandair.net. That's freedomheatingandair.net. So there's this story in the Seattle Times. The headline is, the verdict is in on who did the vaccines right, Washington or Oregon. Hint, it wasn't us. Now, this is written by a lefty nut by the name of Danny Westneat. And he said, 6 weeks ago, I used this space to wonder who's doing the vaccines right, Washington or Oregon. Washington, I wrote, was the science stickler, following the medical ethics guidelines to a T and therefore giving shots first to only those most at risk of death from COVID-19, the elderly. But our little brother state, Oregon, went more with its gut. No, Danny, Oregon went more with a payoff to the teachers union that funds Kate Brown's campaigns and the Democrats. He continues, the governor down there, Kate Brown, went rogue, chose to leapfrog K-12 teachers ahead of 65 and over seniors in the queue. And man, did she get blasted for us. Quote, you are effectively giving many of us a death sentence, read a typical comment to the state. And it's highlighted. You can read that. And by the way, I'll have all this stuff on the show plan on my Facebook page. This one from an 81-year-old doctor in Clackamas. Well, hey, Danny, you think an 81-year-old doctor might have a, you know, a scientific perspective, given that so much science goes into being a doctor. And then he writes, the governor up here was no fan either. Quote, Jay Inslee said at the time, I just do not believe that 25-year-old teachers think they should get in line ahead of their 80-year-old grandparents, unquote. And then, of course, this numbskull leftist said, just goes on to praise Kate Brown. Where it says, Oregon ignored all the barbs and went ahead and got the shots for teachers. When that didn't lead to immediate school reopenings, as hoped, the governor last week brought down the hammer. Whether or not schools should return kids to the classroom this spring is no longer up for discussion, quote unquote, she said. And then it just goes on to say that this was a maverick decision and Jay Inslee's just a Neanderthal. I'm just kind of saying through it. He goes on to say, now our governor, on the other hand, has been doing his best sheep herder dog impression, gamboling around the state trying to cheerlead the schools into reopening. His staff says he lacks legal authority to order them open, which is weird because he's the one who ordered them closed. Good point, by the way, this leftist writer makes. But without vaccines to teachers a la Oregon, he lacks Kate Brown's political clout to try this anyway. Some districts here, he writes, already are bailing on in-person learning for the rest of the year. It's making Sonny J. Inslee's life a little cloudier. Quote, if I had a nickel for every excuse I've heard for not giving our children online instruction, I would be a millionaire at this point. These excuses are just getting a little bit tiresome, frankly, Inslee fumed last week. It's a smart bit. This leftist writer writes, when President Biden sided with Oregon, directing every state to move teachers up the line. Really? Back at 6:30. I've got a lot more to talk about this and your thoughts on it. Oh, bye.
Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
We are back, friends. Great to have you with us. Got an email from Wolfie about the China virus and Corby about the suicide shot. And Rich, about opening schools. I'm going to get to all of that in just a momento here. But I need to share this with you because it's important. My longtime friend and political conservative ally from Linn County, passionate conservative activist, constitutional conservative, Linn County Commissioner John Lindsay died. Suddenly, rather. He had complications from cancer that many did not know he even had. And it was a real shock to so many of us who knew John. I saw John. It was last time I saw John was at a Linn County Republican Party meeting just prior to the election. I was asked to speak, and there were lots of candidates there, and John was there, and I hadn't seen him for a while. You know, when I first ran for office in 1999, John was running for the commission, and he was, it was everywhere I went. You know, when you're running for office for state representative or you're running for a commissioner position in a county, you know, if you want to win, you go show up everywhere. At all, you know, city council meetings, school board meetings. I mean, you just, every little group that met anywhere. And I did that. And so did John. He was everywhere. And he got elected. And he stayed true to his conservative principles throughout the entire time I knew him. All these years. And I greatly admire that because it is tough. It is tough to not be pulled to the place of compromise on issues that commissioners, mayors, governors, state representatives, senators have to deal with. To not be pulled from your principles just to compromise. It's tough, folks, I can tell you. But he did it. And to this day, I greatly admire his public service. He will be missed. John Lindsay, Linn County Commissioner, longtime Linn County Commissioner. Rest in peace, friend. Emails. Wolfie said this about the China virus. Said, Jeff, I was in the hospital yet again, and I thought I would relay a conversation I eavesdrop on while I was there. A patient asked if the hospital had very many COVID-19 patients. The nurse replied the hospital had designated one wing exclusively for them, but at no time has that wing ever had more than 25% filled. He said the real shame is because of the fear of COVID-19. Many patients have put off going to the hospital until getting so bad they absolutely had to go. By that time, it is often too late. Many would have been saved if they had come in early on. Thanks, mainstream media, he writes, for spreading fear and lies. Corby writes, about the suicide shot. Says, you know, I think if you don't want people to die or become transhuman, you don't give a suicide shot to anyone. And then Rich writes regarding schools, reopening schools. Said, you know, South Dakota and a school district in Texas haven't had mask mandates, and they are thriving. Pister, Texas School District has always been open and no mask mandate. The adults there stated the needs of the kids come first. And they have a phrase, quote, if you feel ill, stay home. And when you've recovered, come back to school, unquote. Boy, isn't that common sense? Doesn't that kind of apply to just like about everyone? Every sickness, like a cold or the flu or anything else? He goes on to write, this is for students, teachers, and school employees. What a novel adult idea. We are harming our children with a fear-driven guidance to the schools. I wonder if it isn't on purpose here in Oregon. Damage our children to get the communist agenda done. So who wants to tell the kids they've been used as expendable items to promote an agenda and their futures don't matter to the Democrats and the communists? By the way, did you see those students that have been trying to get their climate change lawsuit advanced in federal court? Yeah, they've been shut down, two, three times now? They're going to try it again. Yep, that's just what we need. I also could not go any further without giving honorable mention to our old buddy, Congressman Kurt Schrader. Yeah, he flip-flopped, folks, on the COVID relief bill. You wonder who got to him, right? I mean, wasn't there a story yesterday, I think it was, that these union groups were going to get to Kurt Schrader. They were going to try to convince him to vote for this bill. Why would that be? Oh, because it's got a bailout to states, including Oregon. So now Kate Brown can keep giving all them their big raises to the workers, who then get to pay more union dues to the union, who then get to give that money to Democrats who will vote for more money for the union, sort of like, you know, the dog chasing the tail. See how that works? Anyway, yep. He said, my concerns have been addressed with the changes in the Senate bill. Really, Kurt? You gotta be kidding me, Kurt. Come on. This is an Oregonian story, and they provide a link to the first vote against the bill. And by the way, you got to love the headline as to the leftist at the Oregonian, the fish wrapper, as Lars calls it. Oregon, the headline in this first vote is Oregon's Kurt Schrader, one of two House Dems to vote against $2,000 checks for COVID relief. That was the headline. The headline could have easily have been Oregon's Kurt Schrader, one of two House Dems to vote against pork-laden, completely non-related spending to the COVID bill. Now, I guess maybe the answer to the question is who got to Kurt Schrader would be the Oregonian's headline. He said it's an ineffective and poorly targeted approach to aiding Americans in distress. This was when he voted against it the other day. It's clearly a political mover by the president and extremists on both sides of the political spectrum who've been largely absent during months of hard negotiations. Schrader criticized the approach, saying people who are making six-figure incomes and have not been impacted by COVID don't need the checks. Of course, I bet we'll find in the postmortem of this thing, somehow somebody over on the Senate side, you know, maybe a Merkley or a Wyden, got some extra pork shoved in that thing on the Senate side for Kurt Schrader. Because who knows, maybe Kurt was holding out his vote. That's why he voted against it. So he could get some pork. And then quietly negotiated that. Or maybe the unions came to Kurt and said to Kurt, hey, Kurt, you really need to vote for this thing because it's got all this bailout money for us so we can keep getting more money. And you know what, Kurt? We'll go to Ron Wyden for you. Is there anything you need, Kurt? You need some pork for your district, some earmarks? What do you want to bet, folks? What do you want to bet if somebody, say an enterprising political reporter, maybe at the Oregonian or maybe at the Statesman Journal or maybe Willamette Week, would actually go compare the two bills, the one that Kurt voted against with the one that he voted for. I bet you there's something in there for the 5th Congressional District of Oregon. Because that's how it works there, folks. I know. I've seen it happen in the Oregon House. Let's go to the phones. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. Art, your thoughts. Good morning.
Well, Jeff, Kurt got the crap beat out of him after he voted against the bill.
Yeah, he did.
And he may have got a little chunk of this or a little chunk of that, but, it was just all over Facebook and stuff on how much of a traitor he was to the Democratic Party. So he most definitely, his issues were addressed. All the money that Pelosi got to bail out San Francisco, Kurt doesn't have a concern about that. There's so many crazy things in that bill that he should have been against because it was definitely a waste of money. Illegal aliens getting the money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Kurt, can't wait till you get replaced come election time. You and Wyden and all the other people who don't really care about.
So, Art, do you think that he just gave Amy Ryan Corser the perfect ammunition to unseat him?
Well,
hang on, Art.
Yeah, okay.
I'll get you on the other side of the break.
Okay. Here,
because that's a bit of a loaded question, but
yeah,
one worth asking. I mean, who likes a flip-flopper? Nobody. 648. My song.
Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
We are back. Great to have you with us 10 minutes till the top of the hour. Again, a quick programming note for you. At the in next hour, I'm going to get into Senate Bill 296, which unfortunately really does suspend many of your constitutional rights in Oregon. It's a bad bill. And we'll also get into the Black Reparations Bill. There's some interesting questions that have been asked of legislative counsel as an official opinion about how this actually comports with the U.S. Constitution. All of that we'll talk about in the next hour. Also want to thank Eric Azar, Righteous Renovations, for being another of our great sponsors. If you're looking for a contractor you can literally trust to do a really good job for you, Righteous Renovations and Eric Azar and his team, they're the people you want to hire. Check out their website if you don't believe me. Lots of proof there. Great photos of before and after projects and, frankly, some very satisfied customer comments. RighteousRenovations.com. RighteousRenovations.com. We'll go back to Art. Art, I asked you that question before we went to the break. Do you think that Kurt's flip-flopping? Nobody likes flip-flopping because they realize it's really disingenuous. So do you think that that is enough that, say, Amy Ryan Corser could use that to actually unseat him this time?
Well, Schrader is kind of in a swing district. There's a lot of Republicans, and there's a lot of independents. And so, obviously, I believe if the right person gets nominated, and don't get me wrong, I voted for Amy. I supported her, had yard signs in my yard and everything. But I think anyone who gets nominated for the Republican Party in that race is going to have lots of ammunition, especially now that he did support this monstrosity of a bill that was more a bailout bill than a COVID-19 bill. So I do believe it has fuel for ammunition, whoever is nominated to run against him. No doubt about it. Schrader pretends he is a middle-of-the-road Democrat, but when it comes right down to it, he's left-wing all the way.
Well, he is. I mean, he votes with Pelosi, you know, what is it, like 98 or 99% of the time. I mean, come on. it's just, you know, but you're right. He's in a swing district. And so every now and then he has to go to Pelosi and say, look, you know, you got to give me a pass on this thing. Okay. Because I'm in a swing district, so I'm going to vote no. And, you know, then I'll vote yes and I'll claim that, you know, I was looking out for the taxpayers and the Senate addressed my concerns, which they didn't, of course. But
well,
it doesn't matter.
I'm sure Kurt got a lot of phone calls from Republicans in his district that said, hey, I don't want you voting for this damn thing. And I don't think the Democrats called because they just assumed he was going to vote for it.
Oh, no, I can bet you that the unions fired up their union base and they were hammering Kurt in his offices. I'll guarantee you that.
After.
You know,
after
the first vote where he voted no. In fact, there was this story in the Oregonian about that. So, all right. So, you know, Kurt's a smart enough guy to know who butters his bread. Well, it's the unions and the radical environmentalists and the cancel culture and the BLM lovers and the big corporate donors. Thanks, Art. Got to go to Kathy.
Who's
up
day,
next.
Jeff.
Kathy, be blessed, brother. Kathy, good morning. What do you think today?
So I was listening to OPB, and they had a, believe it or not, a Republican congresswoman on there, and she was talking about how when they were looking at this bill where all this COVID money is going to go to states, and she said a 600-page bill, Nancy Pelosi gave us 30 minutes, and that was it. She didn't want any more debate about it, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of surprised that OPB let her talk. But my question is, well, what she was saying was that states are not spending the money they've been given. So what is the reason that the states are getting this money, but they're not doling it out? They're not letting loose of it. What is the purpose behind that?
Bureaucratic inefficiency is what it is.
But that's ridiculous.
Well, it is.
Anybody that can balance a checkbook should be able to dole out money that's been appropriated to the states. There's got to be something nefarious about it.
Not if you're a federal bureaucracy. No. It. I don't think it is. I think it's literally just, you know, Washington, D.C. bureaucrats dragging their feet on some of this stuff. I really believe that that's what it is. I mean, there are timelines in some of it. You know, $1 trillion of the $4 trillion that's already been allocated prior to this $2 trillion bill, $1 trillion of that $4 trillion still has not spent.
That's
$1 trillion of what has already been appropriated. It's stunning, but they had to do more.
I think they want money in the bank so they can cover their pension losses or something.
Well, federal pensions, I mean, at the federal level, well, yeah, so what they want to do is they want to pump a lot of money into the states to cover their pension losses. Federal pensions are generally funded unless you're talking about the postal service. That's a whole nother ball game. Kathy, thanks for the call. Look, I am mystified as you are as to how can we have like $1 trillion that was appropriated almost a year ago still hasn't been spent. It's stunning. Now, some of it did get spent quickly, but I bet if you looked into it, it would amount to nothing more than bureaucrats getting in the middle of it because that's what they love to do. Petty bureaucrats establishing new rules. Tim, hang on through the break. I'll get you on the other side or call back. Next hour, folks, I do want to talk about some of the incredibly radical things that teachers are saying about not going back into the schools. And then I'm going to get into Senate Bill 296, which comes out of the Senate Judiciary Committee here in Oregon today, and how it is a threat to your constitutional rights. Kudos to Senator Brian Boquist for putting that out there. And we'll get into it. All of that when we come back, the top of the next hour. Again, programming note, friends, starting Monday, Political Coffee moves to just 1 hour. So make a note of that. We'll have to get at it hard and fast next month. But today and tomorrow, we got 2 hours. See you on the other side of this break, folks.